You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Midside.
Welcome to the Midside, where we survived the Antifa Civil War. I almost said revolution because you guys fucked me up pre-show with the preparation. This is a great start already. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski. And if you enjoy your trip into the Midside here today, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism. Alternatively, you can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/themidside or themidside.com/Patreon in case you get confused and like transpose things the way I do. Also joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
The way you tell people to tell a friend is like, all right already, people. I'm exasperated with your lack of telling a friend. You have mouths. You
Please
have friends.
Tell a friend.
Open them to tell them Jesus Christ.
Have you met me? That's the way I am with everyone who doesn't do what I think they should do.
That is basically the mood, the demeanor of Justin M. Lesneski's tell a friend intro. So,
how should I do it? If you enjoy your trip in the Midside here today, please tell a friend. We would greatly appreciate
please.
That. Is that better?
Well, that's sort of like desperate annoyed. That's your asking a girl out demeanor. We don't need that.
Yeah. That's old school. That's not anymore. I've evolved past that.
His needs are evolving.
That's right. We'll get Christine on the line to ask her about that. But yeah, if we can pull her away from the Snapchat stories long enough to ask her a question.
Instagram.
Oh, whatever.
Stories.
It's the same platform.
Also joining us from the hills of white privilege, James Elias.
I knew it all along. We have just found out that Hillary Clinton was basically blackmailing the DNC into letting her run for them. I just knew that somehow Hillary wasn't making it on her sheer likability on its own. She, in fact, was paying off the debts of the DNC that had been racked up by Barack. And as a result, they pretty much just said, you can do whatever you want forever, just like they said to her husband.
What do you mean? Hillary Clinton has a magnetic personality.
I know, it's hard to believe, but I guess that personality just wasn't enough to make her likable enough to run, and so she had to help herself out a little bit with
the magnetic personality of aluminum.
Yeah.
Did you just repurpose my robot joke into an aluminum joke?
Yes, I did.
Aluminum is a good metal.
Yeah. It's also, you can't.
Because if you said she had a personality of steel, you'd think of Superman. But
right.
With her, it's just pure, it's just artificial, it's efficient, it's light, it's cheap, and
right.
Bends easily.
It also
so.
Does not, you can't put a magnet on aluminum, which was the real point of my joke. But
welcome to the Midside, we're 2 minutes in, we're already explaining our jokes.
That's right.
All right, you want to explain why other people are ridiculous and farcical?
Always.
Yep. All right, let's do it in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Princeton University's 2012 class will not be able to attend a Star Wars-themed party in Stormtrooper gear for fears that it will convey a racist message. Yes, the 5-year class reunion party in early June has this Star Wars universe theme, but attendees were recently contacted, basically saying that they can no longer wear a Stormtrooper outfit because, quote, a few of our classmates reached out expressing concerns over our choice to use Stormtroopers as a costume inspiration. We have been informed of the origin of this word and its connections to early to mid 20th century Germany. This is something neither we nor anyone on the reunion committee were aware of, but something we take very seriously. Tonight we made the unanimous decision to remove these costumes. So attendees will not be able to attend the Star Wars-themed party because stormtroopers were loosely based off of Nazis. Justin. There you go.
Oh, I thought you were going to give me some sort of question or anything. You're just like, there you go. Okay. Here's the thing here. This is a great indictment. This is the greatest indictment of the American education system.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just learned that stormtroopers are based off of troopers from Nazi soldiers. Like, they just learned that. You graduated from Princeton 5 years ago. And then also, I thought, like, when you got out of college, you were supposed to get a sense of reality. They've been out of college for 5 years, and they're still worried that people are dressed as stormtroopers at their five-year college reunion. First of all, who goes to their five-year college reunion? Second of all, who worries about what other people are dressed as at their five-year college reunion?
I was shocked to learn that there are themed college reunions. That's really, I mean, I did go to my five-year reunion. In fact, the five-year reunion, on average, is the most popular reunion, and then no one goes to the 10, like I did not also.
I thought the theme of the five-year reunion was, oh, man, I'm really sad that I haven't started my life yet, and I have to still hold on to my college.
Oh, the theme of my five-year reunion was to demonstrate to my wife how much of a shithole the town was that I went to college in, and to show her the resilience I had in order to make it through the 4 years there. Yes.
Yeah, that's why I'm bringing Christine to an event called Cortical in LA here, where every year Ithaca has their major rivalry game against Cortland sucks. And it's a Division III football game, and it's Ithaca and Cortland, and nobody cares about football the whole year, but they watch that game so much so that they even take over a bar on a very early Saturday morning in LA. And that's why I'm bringing her, to show her how much of a shithole my college was and how much of a drunks people are. So there are other ways to do that. You don't need to, like, dress up as stormtroopers.
I don't get that. I don't get it. Also, because a fictional character was loosely based off of real life bad guys, no one thinks when you're dressing up as the stormtrooper that you're endorsing the Empire.
Well, I'm going to take it a step further, and you've perfectly led into the point that I wanted to make, which is, I think, is the really important point about this story, is this shows the complete misunderstanding of art and literature that our culture currently has. It's everyone approaches it from a subjectivist standpoint where you can identify and like any character in it, even if that's not what the artist intended, because we have this idea that any interpretation is valid. So people think that, oh, if you're dressing up as stormtroopers, that means, as you said, endorsing the Empire. But what they're doing is they're missing the point of it. If you are a true Star Wars fan and you're dressing up as a stormtrooper, you're doing that to point out how evil the Empire is and evil their actions are and their ideas are. If you dress up as Darth Vader, you're dressing up to show, I like this art and I like this villain that shows how evil he is and what true evil is.
Yeah. I don't get it. When people dress up their kids as Frankenstein's monster, are they endorsing the monster? When they're dressed
according
up as vampires,
people,
does that mean
be.
They think we should suck blood?
Well, but I mean, you say that, but look at the way vampires have changed. Vampires originally were about the exaggerated evil of male predation, right? The whole idea of glamoring that vampires do is the way men can manipulate women. Certain men can manipulate women, like very seductive Casanova types. So that became a monster to show how evil that is. But now, look at how vampires have been super sexualized and romanticized to be good. I mean, we had Twilight. We had True Blood. And this idea that vampires are sexy now. So that's completely, I mean, you make that point. But yeah, that's completely evidence of that.
I don't know. I'm sending my kid out as a stormtrooper. It's the coolest little costume to put a kid in. Yeah. I'm just telling you that.
So Xerxes will be a little storm dog?
Xerxes is not my child. He is my property. He is chattel.
Oh, wow. We just got blocked by every PETA and PETA-associated account on the internet for that statement.
That's right. Well, it's not okay to be a stormtrooper, and it's also not okay to be white, at least according to Harvard University in a recent incident. Unidentified individuals or groups posted stickers around Cambridge, Massachusetts last week saying, quote, "It's okay to be white," end quote. Harvard University officials asked police to investigate the matter, and the officials also asked the Department of Public Works to remove these stickers, which were posted on light poles and electrical boxes around Cambridge Common and Harvard Square. In fact, the university president, David Turpin, released a statement saying, quote, "The university is aware of several incidents of racism that have occurred on North Campus in recent days." So, Justin, is it racist to say that it's okay to be white?
No, it's certainly not racist, but the problem we have here is the context. And the context is they're saying this in a reactionary way, right? This is the same rhetorical difficulty the people who say all lives matter face. That statement on itself isn't racist, but people take it as racist because they're doing it as a response to Black Lives Matter. And it's the same thing here when they're doing the it's okay to be white stickers. They're doing that as a response to people calling them racist. So people are, of course, going to take that as racist. The greater underlying issue here is the irony that calling it racist is actually the racist thing. It's the idea that expressing white pride and expressing like, hey, I'm white, is racist.
It's not even, but that's,
I mean, right, expressing the white pride is racist. It's just
right.
Every expressing pride in any other color is also treating race as important as a factor of judgment, therefore racist.
And that's the irony of this, right? It didn't say be proud to be white, or it didn't say,
yeah.
You know, I'm proud of my white oppressor heritage. It said it's okay to be white. Like, as in, like, you shouldn't feel bad for being white.
Yeah.
Would be another way to think about it. Which is,
yeah, and that's what I'm saying. The irony is them calling that racist. Because I want to be clear. I think racism is not just acknowledging race, but also casting a judgment of someone based upon their race, especially a negative one. Mm-hmm. So to simply say, I am racist, I am white, see what I just did there? They've even fucking inceptioned my head. But to simply say, I am white, and like, it's okay that I'm white, and even I'm proud to be white, that's not racist. That would be the same thing of being like, a tall person be like, I'm tall, I'm proud that I'm tall, it's somehow heightist. There's a difference between how you view yourself and how you then go out and view other people based upon how you view yourself. If you go, I'm tall, and oh, fuck those short people because they're not tall like me, that's heightist. But if you go, I'm white, and fuck those people who aren't white like me, that's racist. But if you just go, I'm white, I'm proud, and hey, I like all these people based on if they're good people or not, that's also not racist.
I don't know, because I don't know how far into the minutiae we want to get, but there's actual advantages to being tall. And so you could say, like, I'm happy fact that I'm tall.
Yes, I agree. As a short person, there are advantages to being tall. I
mean, there's advantages
to
being short, too, like, I'm sure also. Yes. But, like, it just depends on what you're trying to do. But,
correct.
Like,
I was just trying to make an analogy.
Yeah.
Correct. Correct. It was not a great analogy, but it was a very easy one for people to understand because it's also physical appearance. So I was just trying to show how it's just a physical appearance thing. That's what I was trying to reduce with the saying, right. Hey, I'm proud that I'm white thing.
I mean, this is a problem that, when I was an undergrad, I actually became good friends with and worked a lot with a professor who described herself as a radical Jew progressive. That's what she described herself as, self-described. And she was very old left in her progressivism. And we worked on a paper together using South Park, actually, as a pedagogical tool to talk about race. And the reason we used South Park is the problem that she anticipated that was going to happen is that we were going to marginalize whiteness in such a way that white no longer became an identity, but a substitute for lack of identity. And her whole thing was, we need to use mechanisms in our culture to be able to talk about racism that don't also make it such that white is the absence of culture, or white is the absence of goodness, she used to say. White is just another race, it's just another culture, and we have to be able to talk about it in that context.
But she missed something important. Yeah. I agree with everything that was said. But that is in line with what I always say about how all white people are not all the same. White is not a culture. okay? There are many different cultures within this group you call white out there, people. And that's what you're doing. That's the irony, is you're whitewashing white people. Do you get the irony there? And that's what she was getting at. She just didn't take it the step further she needed to.
I'm being super shorthanded. The argument was in a 30-page paper that we wrote together. So
no, I'm smarter than her 30-page paper. Fuck you.
I'm just being super shorthanded.
I mean, something she almost definitely didn't understand based on the fact that she held this opinion is that the underlying purpose of the philosophy she holds is to undermine Western civilization and reason and therefore has to attack whiteness as a means of doing that. So she was just, she was good to the extent that she was just inconsistent as a leftist.
Yeah. And not defend, but to clarify, she did not like the identity politics nature of the left. She thought that was a negative.
Well, yeah, naturally. Thing. Yeah.
So anyway, but the whole point of this story to me is, well, there are a couple things going on. One is, I think this is a concerted effort by folks on 4chan, because now it's started to happen at other universities across the country, Kansas being the latest. But the reaction to it, to me, is just stunning. So we already read part of the quote by President David Turpin of Harvard, but the second part is this, which is even more insidious to me, which is, quote, messaging or displays that target or marginalize any individuals or groups will not be tolerated. What?
Oh my god, the irony is so thick you could spread it on your bagel in the morning. Which I did.
I have a question for you, Daniel, and James. Based upon what you just said about the 4chan thing, if you see this is actually a troll attempt by 4chan where their entire purpose was to prove that people on the left were going to react in this way. So they're getting the reaction that they want. Yes. My question, though, is there continued value to doing this? And what I mean by that is I have to try and find where the line between myself and the common man is, the everyday average person. Because for me, like, I don't need this to be continually proved. Like, I know they're going to react like this, and I just have to treat it like they're farcical, they're ridiculous, like they're the ones with the problem. But do these sort of rhetorical trolling tricks still have a place because the average citizen still needs this proven to them?
There is, I think
it's a good question.
It's a good question. It's an excellent question. I think on one hand, philosophically, it might be yes, although I'll let James tackle the philosophy. I don't even want to think like that. I purely want to think about communication strategy, which is one of the things you do in order to keep a movement going or rile your base is to use tactics like this, which basically reiterate what they already know. Or, you know, one good way of doing that is to show hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is an excellent way for motivating your base. So I think that's kind of what this thing does in a rhetorical space, is it keeps the enthusiasm alive for the quote-unquote movement. So I'm not sure it's 100% necessary in terms of demonstrating, because you're not demonstrating something new at this point. You're just reiterating what people already know. James?
Yeah, that sounds good as a rhetorical. Yeah, I mean, I think that it is necessary for a movement like that. However, something to note is that if you're going to keep a movement going, you need to base it also on positives. This is a great negative to keep reiterating in various hilarious ways, but you got to focus on positives most of all. And I don't know exactly what sort of positives, you know, the classical liberal movement, which, you know, which is kind of the people who are pointing out these abuses in particular ways, they need to really define what it is they're in favor of, which they've done to some extent. Like, for example, they've labeled themselves as classical liberals. So that's a start. That's good. But in addition, you know, it's not enough to just simply show the hypocrisy of the other side. You have to show why it's wrong. Because just showing someone that they're a hypocrite doesn't convince them of anything. They just, all you're telling them is that they hold a contradiction. It's like, okay, well, if I hold a contradiction, like, which side is the side that's right? You know, for all I know, the part that says that we shouldn't marginalize people, that's the part that's wrong. Really, it's like, oh, we should marginalize white people and uphold people of color. Like, maybe that's what we're supposed to do. So, you know, showing someone they're inconsistent, if anything, it just pushes them further into their shitty beliefs. Because clearly they hold the shitty side of their beliefs more strongly than the good side, because they keep shifting more and more shitty as time goes on.
It's the shitty shift that we really got to avoid here.
Yeah, so you heard it here first, folks. The philosophic analysis involving the shittiness of people's ideology.
That's right.
Yeah. Speaking of, is the shitty shift the weekend shift at City Walk?
Shitty Walk. Would you like to try some shitty chicken? That's right.
Gotta go in for my shitty shift at Shitty Walk.
That's right. I don't know how you transition now into to sexual harassment.
We're not racist. Proceed to make racist jokes about Chinese people from South Park.
That's right. Speaking of not racism, Dustin Hoffman has been accused of sexually harassing a woman by the name of Anna Graham Hunter, which is not a troll name, Justin.
Wait, yeah, I just realized her name is Anna Graham. Yes. Which is, okay, brief sidebar here. How as a fucking parent do you name your kid Anagram and no one stops you? It's like, you're making your daughter's middle name Graham? Yes. And you're making her first name Anna? Yes.
So, I think they probably wanted to. Right? At that point, you have to know.
So isn't the real point of this story is my parents harassed and abused me upon my birth? Shouldn't that be the headline here?
Yes, that should totally be the headline instead of sexual harassment at the age of 17. So Anna Graham Hunter was a interning on the set of Death of a Salesman.
I'm sorry. Does she just go around and look for anagrams everywhere?
No, Justin. I don't
We're really going to stretch this out as far as it can possibly go. Like
That's what Dustin Hoffman said, and that's why he's in trouble.
Yeah, and interestingly... Anna Graham Hunter is an anagram for arrange a manhunt.
No, it isn't. You're making that up.
No, I'm not. I just looked up anagrams for her name.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So anyway, that's fun. Okay, so here's the story. When she was on the set of Death of a Salesman, Dustin Hoffman allegedly used to grab her butt and then talk sexual things to her all the time. In fact, one of the memorable ones, my God, please no one record this.
We're going to make you say it, Daniel.
You're just quoting, though.
He said to her, quote,
he's just quoting.
And to be fair, this was written by Anagram.
That's right.
We want to be clear about that.
This is written by Arrange a Manhunt. Yeah. She said, quote, or he said, sorry, Dustin Hoffman said, quote, I'll have a hard-boiled egg and a soft-boiled clitoris.
End Drop! Quote.
And then he Drop! Burst out laughing. So the story goes on and on about the sort
asshole.
Of weird sexual things he said to her over the weeks. I won't get into my analysis. Justin... Is the question I have for you is this in the same vein as what we've been hearing about with like Kevin Spacey and Harvey Weinstein, or is this something else? Maybe something bad, but on a scale of 0 to 10, less than a, you know, Weinstein? I don't know. What do you think?
That's the question I had for you. That's not fair. Like, you can't throw that to me. Like, you're undermining everything I had planned here. No, I mean, I think you're asking that question because you know I'm going to answer that in the affirmative, that it's not as bad. Look, I am not excusing this, and I'm not saying it's bad behavior. This is the behavior of someone who not only has no social grace, does not know how to interact with people,
or tell a
but
joke.
Also has extreme insecurity,
yeah,
and you know, probably huge self-esteem issues.
Sure.
So that's what I want to be clear about. This behavior is wrong. But I have to wonder, does this create an issue in our culture when we're blurring the line between this and what Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey did? Because here's what I want to be clear about with this article.
Yeah.
this girl was in over her head. And what I mean by that is, do you remember what the story from the article about the thing that happened on the first day with him was?
I don't remember. Is this the week one thing?
Right, the week one where someone was giving him a foot massage and stopped, and he asked her and she gave him a foot massage?
Mm-hmm.
Now, she was 17, and who knows what her boundaries are because how she was raised, who knows how touchy-feely her family is and everything. So that may have been comfortable and normal for her, and she hadn't learned how to deal with men yet. But a lot of men use, like, a pliability test, where they keep doing little progressions, and that's how they know if the woman is into them or not, especially if there's someone like Dustin Hoffman, who's clearly demonstrating, who isn't as confident in their sexual viability and their sexual desirability. And that's what he was doing with her. So she inadvertently made the mistake of saying, oh, this is okay, by acquiescing and performing that foot massage. To him, he was like, oh, this girl's attracted to me on some level. And then he continued. So he had a fictional connection with her that he didn't actually have, and that's why he did these things. Again, it doesn't make it okay. All of this is very wrong because of the fictional connection in his head. But is it assault? Maybe it's harassment. Is it assault? No, and the way we can demonstrate this later on, and we can see that it's not the same thing as a Harvey Weinstein or a Kevin Spacey, is the most stark thing that was revealing in this story to me was when later on she was talking to another guy on set after she had, you know, after she had grown up, and more power to her. And I have the utmost respect for her. The fact that she asked him to stop, like, that's great that you're 17 and you realize I fucked up and I have to ask this guy to stop. Like, that's tremendous. Like, I admire that. But then she was talking to another guy, and I don't remember exactly. Maybe you can find the quote, Daniel. But Dustin Hoffman came over to her after and was basically like, oh, yeah, you want to fuck that guy? Like, who the fuck does that? Like, only someone who's deeply insecure at the fact that he's been rejected and thinks that women are just going to go around and sleep with lots of guys.
Yeah.
So this does demonstrate the broader culture that is leading to stuff like the Harvey Weinstein happening, right? Harvey Weinstein is a predator who has this same perspective. So this is the underlying culture that's an issue, but there's also a problem when we confuse these two and say they're exactly the same.
James?
Confuse what two things? This sounds really important.
Confusing the fact that this behavior is as evil and as much of an aggression
right,
as what Harvey Weinstein did, because it belittles it. It undermines just how evil what Harvey Weinstein did and these people who are real predators do.
Yeah.
I don't think Dustin Hoffman was a predator. I think he was a young man who was misguided and didn't know how to actually pursue a woman. So he pursued it in these fucked up ways. Yeah. But I don't think his intention was predation.
I mean,
just to be clear,
I don't know what the line between those two is. But like, yeah, this is much less bad for sure.
Just to be clear, this was 32 years ago, which would have made Hoffman like 50, like 48, like not 20s.
Yeah, that's fair. And that's something important to draw. But I would point out that a lot of people in the industry and a lot of actors especially are discouraged and actually incentivized to not grow up.
Yeah, no, I'll grant you that. I also want to make sure that we don't conflate these things. Like, look, the way men approach women varies wildly depending on who they are and their context and their whatever. And this is just not the same to me as someone who uses his power to get sexual advances on a woman. Like, he didn't, you know, push her up against a wall. He didn't say he would, you know, destroy her career for not doing anything. I just, it's bad behavior, but it's not like behavior that we should view as criminal. In my mind,
he kind of did it a little bit. Yeah, it's nothing on the order of Harvey Weinstein and the accusations towards him, but he's doing it a little bit. Like, first of all, just the context of the situation means he, you know, they're just not equals, and that's not an appropriate context for a romantic relationship. Like, you have to have it set up where you're equals, and I mean, I can tell you from personal experience, it's just not comfortable if you. I never felt comfortable initiating if I didn't feel like I was on equal footing with the woman.
Well, there's also a difference between equal footing power-wise in the hierarchy of the specific organization or specific context and equal footing overall personality-wise.
No, I mean like in situations where I was higher in the power context or in the,
right,
in the,
and
in
I
the
agree
corporate
with you,
or the, you know, the employment situation. Like I wasn't right. comfortable and I waited until it was equal.
Right. I agree with you completely that that's the major issue here. And that's what I'm talking about, where him not having the good social graces and the where and knowing how to pursue a woman, where he didn't handle it properly.
Yeah, I mean, it because made her are... really all this stuff was really bad. But yeah, you can't compare it. And yeah, that's got to be on purpose that they're trying to. Well, I mean, here's the thing. Does this article even imply that it's on the same level? It's just saying this was a bad thing and this was uncomfortable and it was inappropriate.
No. And I want
to be clear.
It
doesn't, but the fact that it exists proves that in our society, we can't distinguish between the two because masculinity has been denigrated to the point. And pursuit of women has been denigrated to the point that people can't distinguish anymore. And that actually leads into the next article that we'll get to in a second. But that's the point, is the fact that somebody was like, oh, you know, this seems like something relevant to publish right now because this is exactly the same as what's going on. You know, and then this gets publicized, right? And I haven't read this article yet, but did you know there's rape accusations going around about Danny Masterson from That 70s Show?
No.
Mm-mm. Yeah, nobody's talking about that because we're worried about Dustin Hoffman not being, you know, mature and intelligent enough and psychologically healthy enough to properly pursue a woman.
Right, and I want to be clear that I think Anna Graham, in this article, actually does an admirable job of saying that the situation is more nuanced than anyone wants to make it out to be, and that she herself isn't entirely sure that he's evil or good or whatever, and that it's complicated.
Yeah.
The problem I have overall is that from this point forward, we're going to hear Dustin Hoffman's name in a commaed list of people who are sexual predators.
Mm.
So we're going to say, you know, oh, people like Weinstein, Spacey, Hoffman, you know, sexual predators. It's like, oh, okay, he's a bad guy or this situation is bad, but he should not be mentioned the same breath as these other human beings.
Conflation is what
I don't like.
Yeah. This is not a crime that, like, can't be washed out.
Right. Exactly. So,
yeah. Someone could definitely turn themselves around from this. Whereas, like, you know, the Weinstein thing, I you know, if all of that's true, I don't think so.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, I want to emphasize the point that Daniel just said. I agree that Anna Graham, Hunter, very great. I enjoyed reading this article, and I think she approached it from a very mature and intelligent perspective. So the article itself is actually not bad.
Yeah.
It's the way it's framed and the fact that it was published this way that's the issue. So that's an interesting way to look at the way media disseminates information and everything. So the article itself is like, I would have enjoyed reading that no matter what was going on. If this had come out 5 years from now or 5 years ago, I would have been like, oh, wow, this is a really interesting look into the way set dynamics are and the way certain male psychologies are and the way certain female psychologies are. It's a very interesting article. But I also want to make that point again that you said. I do not think Dustin Hoffman was being a predator. I think he didn't know what he was doing, and I think he had, maybe still has, major issues with himself. But I think to call him a predator minimizes actual predation.
Yeah.
Right. So, Justin referenced an article that was coming, and so why not just go ahead and get to it. This is an article written by Douglas Murray in The Spectator, the title of which is a little strange, but the article itself is really good. So the title is, "The Consequence of This New Sexual Counter-Revolution? No Sex at All. Feminism isn't producing guides for helping men, it is producing manifestos for torturing them." So this is the thesis, basically. Quote, "We are in the middle of a profound shift in our attitude towards sex, a sexual counter-revolution, if you will. And whereas the 1960s saw a freeing up of attitudes towards sex, pushing at boundaries, this counterswing is turning sexual freedom into sexual fear, and nearly all sexual opportunities into a legalistic minefield. The rules are being redrawn with little idea of where the boundaries of this new sexual utopia will lie, and less idea still of whether any sex will be allowed in the end."
Shit.
it's an interesting observation about the difference between the sexual attitudes now and the sexual attitudes of the 60s and the sexual revolution. He says, he continues, quote, "Since then, the exhilarating and powerful weapon of social media has whipped this along in every unpredictable direction." He then goes on to cite many of the examples of, you know, people being taken down. And in fact, being from England, he's talking about 27 MPs who've been listed as behaving badly toward women and 13 towards men. There's talks of criminal investigations, talks about Me Too. And, you know, even so much that this week, the Crown actress Claire Foy was forced to issue a statement saying she had not been offended after angry Twitter users pointed out that the actor Adam Sandler had touched her knee twice during their appearance on the Graham Norton show. Okay, so Justin, makes a profound, well, observation, I think, even if it's a simple one, in this article about the anti-cultural, anti-sexual revolution. Do you think he's on to something?
I think he's on to something because this is something I've talked about many times before, and it's something that I've experienced in my life. It's one of those things where you said I was kind of ahead of the curve because of where I went to high school and where I went to undergrad. You know, I went to high school in a private school in Massachusetts. I went to undergrad in Ithaca College, one of the three most liberal college towns, or excuse me, leftist college towns in America. So I was kind of ahead of the curve. And I want to get into that and go into a rant. And I just want to say that this rant is inspired by Midsider Mark, who sent in this article. And I know he sent it in because he wanted to hear me rant. So, Mark, thank you for sending in this article. And here we go. So everything this article said is good, but I want to really focus on the pragmatic and the practical as far as how does this affect people's psychology and affect people's actions. And there's one quote in here, one paragraph, which is really, really good, and I want to read that and then sort of talk about like my personal experience as far as that goes. Quote, "Are we comfortable with the idea that whenever sexual interest is expressed, it must be fully reciprocated at the risk, when declined, of utter ruin? We might expect people in public life to behave well, but are we certain that we want to create a situation where everyone there, however tenuously, must be either monogamous or celibate? Would the public like this morality to trickle down to them? The morality of the sexual revolution certainly did, so they can be assured that the effects of any counter-revolution will come to them too. So, just to be clear, this is the point here. Are we certain that we want to create a situation where everyone there, however tenuously, must be either monogamous or celibate?" I say that because I think this is a large reason I was celibate for so long in my life, because I had this fear that if I approached a girl who wasn't interested in me, that she would just destroy me. And I mean that quite literally. I believed that I would be labeled, just as we were talking about with Dustin Hoffman, a sexual predator. When I was young, when I was in college, the label was creepy. You know, now it has escalated to rapist. Now it has escalated to, you know, toxic masculinity. But I grew up with this idea that you needed to have a woman's permission to approach her. So she already had to find you attractive to approach her. Now, this completely shifts the balance of power to the woman's favor, because it takes away the male power in the courting ritual. The male power is the power of the approach. The woman's power is the power of the rejection. Men reject lots of women every day. They just do it in their head by not approaching them. And when you take that away from the man, you're basically saying all that matters is if the woman is attractive to you or not. And then what you're saying is all that matters is if you are this arbitrary paragon of whatever they view as super attractive masculinity is. And I can tell you that that negatively affected my psychology. It's still something I'm dealing with to this day. I upset my girlfriend the other day because I said something that was a result of this stuff still fucking with my head. It's the idea that there are guys out there that they can do whatever they want because they're fucking super hot, like the Ryan Gosling types, right? These types that Hollywood raises up, the idea that everyone is attracted to one type, right? The Brad Pitt type. Because they always have a woman's permission, right? You always hear, oh, well, if that guy talked to me, blah, blah, blah. So then the rest of us feel like, oh, we're not allowed to approach women, which, again, undermines our own validity, our own masculinity, and our own efficacy. And that's the result of all this. So they're 100% right. You're forced to either be monogamous because a woman has finally picked you, and that's who you get to be with, or celibate because you don't have a right to assert your sexual desire. And that's not a society. That's not humanity. I think that's a good end to point to the rant. Daniel, James?
I experienced the exact same thing young. Not that I ever felt like I'd be charged of some kind of crime if I came on to a female, but like, just you'd get socially ostracized. Like, oh, the attitude was never like, oh, I never felt like the attitude was like, oh, you know, James went for it and then, you know, she rejected him. Oh, well, it never felt like that would be the social perception. The perception was like, oh, that's weird that he, you know, them together, like, oh, that's weird, like,
right, it was
imposing myself upon her when doing that.
And correct, as a result, it was never, hey, you're commended, James, good job, like, I'm glad you had the confidence, appreciate that. And it was never, she never even thanked you and been like, oh, thank you, I appreciate your interest, that's a compliment.
I mean, I'm not expecting that. I'm just expecting, like, okay, he did that and it didn't work, fine. Like, just, I at least want it to be neutral.
Right. That's how bad it is.
Yeah,
that's how bad it is that you're just yearning for it to be neutral.
Yeah, like, and as a result, even though, you know, I didn't remain celibate, you know, very long, like, every single time I did pursue a woman, I took a really long ass time. I waited until I really basically was friends with them. And then didn't make any kind of advances like you see Adam Sandler making in this picture, where he's just kind of being flirty, just touching her leg, just trying to having a good time. I never did that. I would just say, like, all I could do is just really be just straightforward and saying, you know, like, I'm attracted to you, we should make out. Like, I would just, that's how I'd have to do it. That's the way I was comfortable, because I was afraid, like, oh, well, if I do something wrong, like, there's going to be these big social consequences. So I have to just be I have to completely trust them and then just completely be straightforward. So.
Right, because even the way you did it demonstrates this idea that some women get offended if guys approach them that they find unattractive, like, oh, why? Why would he think I would be interested in him? Oh, wow. How dare he have the self-esteem to think someone he finds attractive might find him attractive?
Yeah, there's something really weird going on there. Like, there's some weird premises underneath that insult that they, you know, pretend or they claim to feel.
Yeah, and I think, you know, making this a little bit broader, this has to do, I think, with the cultural thing that we talk about a lot on the podcast about interpersonal hostility. And this isn't just, you know, the male-female relationship. It's the everyone-to-everyone relationship at the time being, which is any interaction that I don't want with another human being is because that person is trying to hurt me. It's because that person is malevolent. And I know this is a word that objectivists especially get scared when it gets brought up. Certainly, there's a lot of context around it, but I think the culture on whole could use a little more benevolence for the time being, not only in the male-female relationship, but in the political relationships and our relationships as business owners and customers, and just about every social interaction, we could use a little more benevolence and not want to get sort of final arbiters involved, whether it be the government or our employers or whoever it is, to punish the other human being or doing something that we don't like.
Well, isn't that where James's point about yearning for just the neutral comes in? Like, aiming for the benevolence is a little high right now. Can we just think that other people exist and have desires and values that they want to pursue too, and that they're not just trying to get in our way? I mean, that's my number one thing about going out in the world in California, is like, everyone seems to think I'm an obstacle who's just trying to impede them, so all they're trying to do is get around me as quickly as possible. Not realizing that I don't give a shit. I'm just trying to do what I want to do too. It's not like I'm trying to stop someone else.
So yeah, neutral maybe would be an improvement. Just get to the neutral first. Certainly.
Yeah.
I'm shooting for the moon, and even if I miss, I'll land among the stars.
That's Daniel. When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Yep.
That is amore.
What is amore?
Love.
He's a professional amore wrestler who's a cruiserweight champion.
Oh, amore, not like, okay, God.
What, do you think it was an eel, James?
Yes, I've been confused about this for like 20 years. Like a big pizza pie,
that's an electric eel.
Wait, yes. you thought like, that for your whole life?
More. I'm like, what is a more a? What is a more?
That's one of those really bad. That's one of those really bad jokes I make. Like I've always done that. I've always gone, that's a more eel as just a joke. Just like I've always gone whenever I say.
Yeah, right. I'm aware. More eel, but I thought more meant something else. You know, like a cultural more.
Okay, if this is not proof that people have lost the diversity of whiteness because you don't know what amore means in Italian.
I know what amore means in Italian. I just didn't know that that's what they were talking about in that song.
The song's an Italian song.
I know. The super I guess Italian I just took it for granted.
With the little concertinas playing accordions. Okay, never mind. All right, moving on. This is just pitiful.
Does anyone have anything else to say about this article or this idea or anything?
I think it's the anti-sexual revolution is an interesting concept that we should track here on the Midside and think more about.
We definitely have been tracking it. It was just originally in the whole, you know, Milo Yiannopoulos talking about men going their own way and all of that stuff. The
sexodus.
Which I think, yeah, the sexodus. Thank you. That was the word I was looking for. And I think that's part of it, but I think we minimize it by only talking about that because women are doing harm to themselves by embracing this.
Yeah.
So I don't want to just solely focus on that anymore, although I think that is also important.
You know what else is important?
You doing my transitions for me. Mm-hmm. It's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Over on Twitter, Midsider Justin sent a tweet to me. This is not myself. I do not have split personalities. There's actually a Justin who listens to the show. So thank you for tweeting at us, Justin. He wanted to know if we were going to review Thor. Okay, I did not see Thor because I am very marveled out. He said that the director is very talented and there are some good things about it. So maybe I'll go see it with my movie pass this week. But I decided to see a different movie, and that's why I wanted to preface this by saying that I'm marveled out, because this is how marveled out I am. I saw Jigsaw, the eighth Saw movie.
Wow.
Now, I don't want to go into this too much for exactly the reaction Daniel just had. I saw the eighth Saw movie, okay, guys? Like, let's think about that for a second. It's exactly what you would think it is. My main problem with this franchise is it was built on the back of Tobin Bell. So I'm going to tell you more right now about the Saw franchise than you ever wanted to know. So if anyone ever asks you about it, you can say you heard on the Midside what the deal is with the Saw franchise. The Saw franchise is a really interesting idea. If you watch the first three Saws, they get progressively worse. But the first three are enjoyable movies, and the first one is a very good one. And it's the idea of this guy thinks there's such immorality in the world, and immorality couching the idea that people aren't living their lives, that they're evading the sins that they've committed in order to protect their sense of self, which I think that is a very great identification in our culture. So he designs these traps, which you can win, but you're going to get disfigured or you're going to have to hurt someone else to get out of. And that's an interesting thing. And, you know, because it's like, well, I understand where the villain's coming from, but he's obviously doing these fucked up things. And it's very tense and psychological in the beginning. And then there's a big twist at the end of the first one. Now, every movie since has tried to do two things. It's tried to preserve Tobin Bell as Jigsaw, the Jigsaw killer, the guy who designs the traps, and also tried to have a twist ending. Now, when you're on the eighth movie and Jigsaw was killed off in the third movie and they did an autopsy on him in the fourth, and the reason they did this is the original writers of the trilogy left after the trilogy, but the studio said they were going to keep going. So they were like, fuck you to the studio, and killed their villain to be like, haha, keep this going if you can, right? It's like a fuck you. And little did they know, they fucking kept it going for, what, five more movies? So when you kill your villain off in the third movie and autopsy him in the fourth, you can't do an eighth movie unless you go mystical. And this movie teased that they were going to go mystical. The Jigsaw killings started up again. There was another game, and the cop kept getting bodies left for him to find to be like, hey, the game's still on. And everyone's like, wait, is Jigsaw doing it? And then they exhume the corpse and the casket's empty. And then they show that they have scenes where Jigsaw reveals himself to be the one who started this game. And it's Tobin Bell. And you're like, wow, they actually brought him back. I'm glad they're going the mystical route. But then they fucking bitched out of it at the end. And they bitched out and they revealed, oh, this game that Tobin Bell set up is actually 10 years prior to the movie. And the game is before the original movie. And that's all a flashback. And one of the characters in the movie is actually a former apprentice of Jigsaw who's now going to become the new Jigsaw. And just here's my thing. Friday the 13th at least went mystical. They were like, right, we killed Jason. Jason's such a great villain. We're just going to make it mystical. Just do the same thing with Saw at this point. And I know people are going to be like, oh, it's based upon mechanical engineering. He engineers this trap, so it doesn't make sense that it's going to be, you know, mystical. Who gives a shit? If you've got a good villain, you've got a good role. Like, to me, Tobin Bell to Jigsaw is the same as Johnny Depp to Jack Sparrow. If you just fucking lean into what you're doing, it will be better. But now it's just become so convoluted and ridiculous that it's exactly what you would think the eighth Saw would be like, and I've probably spent too much time on this already. So, why you should see this movie? You should see this movie if it's Friday night, you have a movie pass, you need podcast content, and your girlfriend is mad at you.
Kind of specific situation. I don't know if anyone's going to fit that bill. No one I know would fit that bill, certainly.
There's like three other, you know, white men in the audience. You point at one of them, you're like, you too, eh?
No, don't point. Pointing is part of the reason your girlfriend can get mad at you. Don't point. And you should not see this movie if you have anything else to see. So, Midsider Justin, I probably should have seen Thor and reviewed it instead, but I'm just so fed up with Marvel at this point that I'd rather go in with the hope that Tobin Bell's Jigsaw will actually be resurrected and then find out he is actually not resurrected and be disappointed again than to see Thor. So maybe I'll see it, maybe I won't, but I saw Jigsaw instead.
I was looking up movies with lots of sequels because I thought, oh, Jigsaw has to be like in the top. It's like, oh, it's not even in the top 100, it looks like, with movies with a number of sequels, which is crazy.
I mean, how many of them are horror franchises? Because horror is known for doing this.
Well, Friday the 13th is up there. I can't find the exact number on it, oddly. Sites vary, but it's up there. I think it's 15. They're counting as sequels. But like,
well, they did the reboot as well, so does the reboot count as a sequel? So there's a bunch of confusion there.
Yeah. You know what? You know what sits at the top of this list? And I'm not going to count porn. This list does have porn on it, which I think is retarded. But, like, so Debbie Does Dallas has 20. It's like, okay, that's insane. But do you know what sits on top of the list that's an actual movie of actual sequels? Any
James
guesses?
James Bond?
I would be shocked if you got it. James Bond is up there, but it's not in the top even 10. Wallace and Gromit.
What? No.
Interesting.
Which has had 20 sequels.
Oh, well, shit. Where's the other 16 that I haven't watched?
Well, I can send you a list on Wikipedia.
Yeah, send it.
I mean, that explains why that guy moved on to that shitty other movie we talked about the trailer for a while back. Like, he was just like, I gotta do something new, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Crazy.
All right, let's talk about some other trailers.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Acrimony is a movie written by, directed by, but not starring, Tyler Perry. It stars, and I'm probably going to mispronounce her first name, and I don't mean that as any disrespect, as you'll see in a moment here. It stars Tahiri? I don't know how to say her name. Henson, who is also on Empire. And it's about a woman who marries this guy and is then scorned by him because he marries somebody else. I wasn't very clear on that. Maybe somebody can clear that up for me.
It's a bit of a mystery, I think.
Yeah. And that was, you know, one of the things, you know, people love to talk shit about Tyler Perry, but he did create a very identifiable and recognizable mood in this trailer. But the thing I want to say about this trailer is I think that this woman is a tremendous actress. I don't like the roles she chooses. Like, I don't like Empire. It's not an entertaining show. I don't think it's a good show. But when I saw it, she was good in it. And in this trailer, she was very good. It made me want to watch this movie just for her performance. I would like to see, and we've talked about this trailer previously, I would like to see her get more popular. Or we talked about another trailer previously. I would like to see her get more popular. And I would like to see Vera Farmiga, who's now in The Commuter, I would like to see her get more popular and maybe put these two in a movie together. I think they're both tremendous actresses. They're not in the typical age that we see why now Hollywood was only casting young women. So I don't know if I'll see this movie in theaters, but sometimes you just want to watch a movie because of how good the performance is. And I think this is one of them. I'm hugging this.
Hug.
I have to wholeheartedly agree. Saw Tyler Perry and I went, ugh. But here's what I'll say about Tyler Perry. Was I had that initial emotional reaction, and then like when I was home for Christmas one year, I think Tyler Perry's Medea Christmas or something was on, and like it's literally one of these things where you're like, this can't possibly have any value because it's Tyler Perry Medea and it also stars Larry the Cable Guy. And we sat there and laughed our asses off at this film. Like, it was actually really well written. The plot was retarded. The plot was something written by manatees kicking out beach balls from a giant pool of water. But the writing in terms of like comedy and jokes was legit funny. And then I saw this trailer, had the same Tyler Perry reaction. Then I thought, well, let me just watch it for what it is. It's a genuinely interesting psychological mystery almost. I'm not sure it's a thriller. It might be ended up being a thriller, but it's like a psychological mystery for the trailer. So yeah, you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I'm going to tentatively hug this.
Hug.
That's right.
All right, Daniel. I said it. I have something to reply to you with, and I think it'll be able to reply to James as well. So after you go, James, I'm going to ask you guys a question. So go ahead, James.
I didn't like this. This kind of disturbed me. It seemed like revenge porn for women, basically. It seemed like this, I mean, I could be wrong. This could just be a plot that just is what it is. But it just, the only context I could draw from this is just like, hey, this is what we're going to, you know, we're going to go out with the girls and, you know, think about cutting our dude's dick off.
That movie is Bobbit, the Lorena Bobbit story.
So is that a tackle, James?
That's a tackle.
Tackle.
All right. You got to remember to say hug or tackle, please.
I mean,
I agree with you that it's probably a revenge porn on some level. I agree with you. But that's the question I want to ask, even about Tyler Perry's movies in general. Is some of the hatred for Tyler Perry's movies a hatred of romanticism? And what I mean by that is he is not trying to recreate reality. He is not trying to do naturalism. He is trying to select a certain part of reality and do it a certain way. You know, we can argue whether he does it optimally. We can argue whether he's on the level of a Snyder. He's not, but that's a discussion we can have. I still think some of the pushback, though, is the fact that it's romanticism and it's not particularly well done romanticism.
Yeah, it's I think Ayn Rand had a term for like this music that she enjoyed, but it was like super basic and
tiddlywinks
music. Thank you. Couldn't quite get that out. I was trying to stall. And it might be like that, where it's, you know, not great, but certainly enjoyable. And I'm not going to lie to you, it made me more interested in watching Medea movies. That was really painful to say out loud.
Well, no, certainly. Sometimes you watch a later work by an artist that has been sort of shit on, and then you go watch it and you go, wow, that was actually more entertaining than I thought. I wonder what his other work is like.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It was interesting to me. The romanticism question is an interesting one, even if it's sort of light romanticism.
Right, just something to track going forward, because Tyler Perry, like him or not, you have to admire what he's done. He's created his own studio in Atlanta. He's making the movies he wants to make. Whether you enjoy his art or not, I think you have to. I will make that statement. Admire him for what he's done, what he's accomplished.
Making all that money.
Second trailer.
Blockers is a comedy, seems like in the style of like a Will Ferrell type comedy, starring John Cena and, fuck, I can't remember her name, Judd Apatow's wife. Help me out.
Banks.
Help me out.
No.
What?
No.
It's not Elizabeth Banks. The really funny woman who was in 40-Year-Old Virgin and Knocked Up and everything, and this is 40.
Judd
Can't remember
Apatow
her name. Anyway.
Wife into Google. Leslie Mann.
Leslie Mann. There we go. Leslie Mann. Thank you. Thank you to everyone who answered that question for me. Yeah, it stars that. And it stars that other guy. I don't remember his name, but he's mildly funny in things. And they're playing three parents who they met when their kids were young, and they've grown up together with their kids. And now the kids are going to prom night, and they find that the kids have made a virginity pact where they're going to lose their virginity, just like in American Pie where they made a virginity pact, except they're going to stop them. So this movie really is cock blockers, even though it's called Blockers. And this is one of those movies where they go over the top and they're ridiculous with things. And I wanted to like this because it's John Cena and it's Leslie Mann, and Leslie Mann's very funny. And I just like John Cena because he's a cool pro wrestler and he's from Boston. So like, I like him. He's got a really good perspective on things. But then, like, I'm laughing at this trailer, and I'm like, why am I laughing? Like, you get to the end.
Yes,
and
exactly.
He's like, let's do a beer chugging contest. And he's like, okay. Like, a beer funnel contest. He's like, okay. And then they do it in their ass. And then, so John Cena does it where he funnels the beer into his ass, and then it comes back up the funnel because you can obviously, there's only so much liquid you can put into your ass before it becomes an enema, right? And then it goes back up.
Everyone is well aware of the amount of liquid you can put in one's ass before it becomes an edema. I mean, that's...
And then...
That, but not that stormtroopers were inspired by Nazis, certainly.
Actually, I think you raise a good point that I think people would be more aware of what I just said than the stormtrooper thing.
Yes.
But okay. And then the other guy drinks it, and he's like, I just drank ass beer! And I laughed at it, but I went, why am I laughing at this? This is so ignorant. So, like, I just can't. I can't hug this. I have to tackle it.
Tackle.
Daniel?
Tackle.
Tackle.
No
Fuck
commentary.
This movie. I hate this kind of shit. I just hate it. Look, I know it makes a bunch of money and people like it. Fine, whatever. I don't care. I'm not some libertarian overlord who would outlaw this nonsense, but it's just so terrible. Just, ugh. Ugh.
James?
I agree that it shouldn't be outlawed.
But just
this is one of those movies that I would laugh at and then feel bad. Like, I mean, it's exactly what you just said. I'd laugh at it and then I'd feel bad afterwards. I'd just be like, oh my god, like, why am I laughing at just our culture just degrading into dog shit?
Say it.
Tackle!
Tackle.
You're so bad at this, James.
Final trailer.
Den of Thieves is... I don't even really know how to describe this movie. I do know the trailer came on before Jigsaw. I'd rather just say my reaction to the trailer than maybe Daniel can handle the plotting or James can handle the plotting. So this trailer started and it's like, shot, establishing shot of city. Oh, here are two, like, criminals. Oh, and one is 50 Cent. And I'm like, I am totally not into this movie right now. And then Gerard Butler showed up. And I said to myself, man, Gerard Butler gets no respect. Like, he is really good in anything he's in, yet he, like, seems to struggle to get really good roles. It's like, I feel like I want to support Gerard Butler. So I'm kind of torn on this movie. Like, it looks generic. It doesn't look like there's anything interesting about it, except Gerard Butler is really fucking awesome. So I may just... You know, I'm going to hug this based upon Gerard Butler.
Oh, wow. That took a turn. I think Gerard Butler is a conservative in Hollywood, and thus he doesn't get good roles.
Oh, that explains it. And that explains why he's more romantic as well with the roles he chooses.
Yeah, that's why he doesn't get good roles. So,
and why his movies get panned. Like, I never saw it, but didn't he do like White House Down or some shit?
Well, he's done all those Down movies, and I poo-pooed them, and then Faiza was like, no, you have to watch these, and I did, and they're fucking awesome.
That's really what I'm saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not only are they awesome, but they take a moral stance that I've never seen in movies, ever. And the moral stance is the terrorist tries to do this whole thing where it's like, you bombed our country, and that's why I'm killing British people. And the guy's like, fuck you. That has nothing to do with it. Your ideology is shit, and we'll eliminate every last one of you. and he's the hero. And I'm like, yes, yes.
It's similar to Die Hard, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's not. It's a little... I mean, Die Hard
is the
everyman
hero. I want to be
hero,
precise here, though.
He's not.
Right. So. But I want to be precise here. James made a point, and he is correct. We're talking about the Olympus Has Fallen series. Yes. White House Down is the Channing Tatum, Jamie Foxx movie.
Oh.
Which may be good as well. I don't know. I like Channing Tatum,
too. Netflix. Is it still on Netflix?
Sure.
Olympus Has Fallen.
I don't know. Well, watch them all. Olympus Has Fallen, White House Down. But yeah.
London Has Fallen is particularly good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, yeah. No, okay, wait. Yeah. White House Down is not part of this, right?
No.
Or is
no, that's the other one that came out around the same time and is starring Channing Tatum and Jamie Foxx. They're very similar. Jamie Foxx plays the president, I believe.
Yeah, but it's not actually, like, of this same vein that Daniel's talking about.
No.
Yeah, so
Although, interestingly,
Olympus Has Fallen and then London Has Fallen.
Yes, and there's a third one coming, but I don't know.
That sounds cool.
Yes.
The president... in White House Down is named James Sawyer. That can't be a coincidence, right? Somebody had to have watched Lost and named that character after James Sawyer Ford.
Yeah, I like that name. Yeah, probably.
They both get very bad grades on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes, they do.
Fuck Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I'm just saying. just noting
my only
it.
Response. Anytime anyone brings up... What's the audience scores for both of them?
Let's check.
Rotten Tomatoes. It's certainly
I want to say, like, the
audience
is only
score at 51 on London, and Tomato Meter's at 25 on London. London Has Fallen, and then...
The audience can also go fuck themselves, because it's a legitimately good action movie.
I don't even care. Like, I just trust Daniel's statement. Olympus Has Fallen got 67% audience and 50%
Tomato. James,
right, it's probably
James,
even better.
There are so many guns.
I believe you. I mean, look at this picture. Everyone in this picture has a gun on Rotten Tomatoes. It's a bunch of dudes like dancing or something, and each one of them has a gun.
Yes.
What about White House Down? What does that have?
Let's check. Why are we doing this?
So, I don't know. While James is looking that up, I will give my very pithy review of this movie, Den of Thieves, which is the plot to me is there are bank robbers who have to continually up the ante. And then there's, like, the Special Forces L.A. Police Department who, there's no one better in the business, you know, that kind of feeling. And the robbers decide they're going to rob the L.A., like, I don't know, the L.A. Police's evidence collection unit, which has millions of dollars in cash just sitting around. And then it turns out that the special crimes people are also bad guys. So that's the plot. You know,
and then Gerard Butler has to stop them all.
Gerard Butler had to eat 58 donuts a day to prepare for this role, it looks like.
You see how you looked in 300? Look at the opposite of that.
Yes, now he looked that way in 300. In this movie, he's just 300 pounds.
He doesn't look that bad.
He looks bad for Gerard Butler.
Mackenzie's shaking her head at me.
He looks bad for Gerard Butler. So.
Mackenzie says
no, he doesn't.
Shut
up, Mackenzie. Nope, wrong.
As usual.
No women on the podcast. No women allowed.
Here's him with a rifle, battle gear. He's pretty hot. He's
okay,
just bigger.
What did White House Down have on Rotten Tomatoes?
White House Down gets a slightly lower rating on both counts than Olympus Has Fallen.
Hmm. What are the numbers?
50 tomato and 62 audience.
Interesting. And interestingly, the audience for Jigsaw had Jigsaw at 86% last chance I looked.
Wow.
So interesting.
So
Daniel, hug or tackle.
Okay, this is the longest segment ever, which is appropriate because the trailer for Den of Thieves might be the longest trailer I've ever watched.
Yeah, it's
in my
almost
life.
3 minutes.
It is so long.
I was down with it being that long.
I watched it, started watching it. My dog was barking, so I got up, got my dog food, water, got a drink for myself, came back, and it was still going. I was like, what the fuck is going on
right now? And you still
were
able to make this review.
Yes. it looks boring as hell, actually, so I'm going to tackle. James?
This looks badass. I watched the whole preview, all 2 hours and 44 minutes of it, and I liked it, enjoyed the whole thing. Hug. So many guns.
All right. Let's move on to other things that probably say more than we ever cared, but we're still going to talk about them. It's time for Reddit on Reddit.
These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't host it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit. What are the prospects for Kevin Spacey? Could his career possibly continue slash recover in any sense?
Well, yeah, he could become a priest.
Wow, that was a really dense joke about what his career is.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he's going to make it past this, at least not for the time being. The culture is too on heightened awareness, or as the Spectator article put it earlier, too much on moral panic to put him in anything for the time being. Like, he might make a resurgence a la Jane Fonda, who, like, took a 30-year hiatus and then came back to have a career. So, I mean, he's a little bit old for that to happen, but maybe. But I don't think we see him in anything major for years. That'd be my guess.
When you talk about resurgence, what about, like, the Robert Downey Jr. resurgence?
Well, different, right? Also a different cultural context. Maybe now if that happens to Robert Downey Jr., he doesn't have a resurgence.
What did Downey Jr. do again to get in jail?
Lots and lots of drugs. Lots and lots of drugs.
That doesn't compare.
And, oh, I agree. It doesn't compare at all.
Did he rub his balls on someone while he was high?
I mean, probably. I mean, if you're doing that many drugs, like...
Yeah, but I mean, he was on drugs. No, well, I mean, but seriously, that doesn't compare.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was just saying that's another example of a comeback, and a major one. Probably the major example of a comeback.
I don't know if you come back from this if you're guilty, even if you just did it once. I mean, you shouldn't come back from something like this if you're guilty.
Oh, I agree that you shouldn't come back at all, but the question I have is this. Does the average American care? Now, I think when you look at someone like Harvey Weinstein, people are going to be like, oh, okay, yeah, like, fuck that guy. But, like, with what happened with Kevin Spacey, does the average American actually know the details of the story? I'm assuming we're not the average American and we read about it and we know what happened. We know who Anthony Rapp is. We know all of that. Does the average American know the details here that they will remember in 5 years?
I find that things like this happen one of two ways. One is that most people don't know anything about anything. Or it'll be Kevin Spacey, isn't he that guy who raped a kid? Which is, they're not going to read the details, they're just going to get the high-level overview, and that's it, period.
Which is good enough.
Which is pretty close. I mean, he didn't quite rape him, but...
I mean, I hope that is what happened. I mean, this is one of those, if you look at the movies Kevin Spacey has made, I mean, look at American Beauty, like, it all sort of makes sense now. American Beauty is one of those movies that is actually terrible, but people make it out to be great because it undermines, you know, the ideas of America. It's like, oh, everyone who actually espouses these pro-American views and these pro-liberty views are actually hiding some dark secret that makes it so they're doing that, which is, irony. Of course, it is irony, but that's the projection these people are doing, and that's what's been revealed now. So I hope, like, we can finally get rid of this myth that Kevin Spacey is a good actor and a good guy because he has these, you know, leftist social justice causes. I just don't have the faith necessarily that people are going to care that long.
Here's the
idea that he's a good actor may win out. Yes.
And this is something like, like after the whole Bill Cosby thing, like FISA wanted to put on like a Bill Cosby special one night when friends were over. And like, you could see the tension in the room of like, are we allowed to watch and laugh at Bill Cosby's, you know, stand-up routines from the 80s? And so the question is, like, I fucking loved the first few seasons of House of Cards. Like, is that going to become a social faux pas? Like, to be able to watch those and enjoy them now?
I don't. Huh.
Is that the direction the culture is going?
I think with that in particular, I think that role works because he wasn't really acting. I mean, don't we see that now? I mean, I'm being serious.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like, if I list House of Cards as one of my favorite shows, am I going to be looked at as like a bad person?
Because it's not that good of a show to begin with.
The first two seasons are phenomenal.
I liked all of them, but I mean, I don't think that's the way people view it. It's definitely not the way I view it. I feel like you can separate the fact that someone's good at their job from the fact that they committed an evil.
Well, how far do you take it? Bill Cosby? Can I watch Bill Cosby specials?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I haven't watched it, but everyone seems to think he was really funny, and I've only ever heard legitimate reasons for thinking he was funny. Like,
Watch O.J. Simpson highlights and games?
No, because he's a Buffalo Bill. Fuck you. No, I think what you're seeing here, Daniel, coming up against is that these people are talented on some level, and they use the talent to put themselves, and we saw this with Dustin Hoffman too. And this is what I'm talking about, where Dustin Hoffman isn't a predator, but it's the same sort of underlying mentality and psychology. They use their talent to manipulate themselves into a situation where they can do the things that they don't believe they have the efficacy to do normally. And that's how they end up doing the things they do. So you're saying, well, should the talent still be recognized? This is the question I would ask you. You know, I made the joke that Kevin Spacey wasn't really acting. The question I would ask you is, did they get there at the expense of someone else? Or did they get there on their own merits and then use the position to manipulate? Because those are two different things. If they got there on their own merits, then yeah, before they fucking devolved, maybe Bill Cosby got there on his own merits and then devolved. Before they devolved, it would be okay to watch. And I think in the example of House of Cards, it's okay to watch because, like I said, you're actually just seeing a portrayal of Kevin Spacey on screen. So now there's another layer to it.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question. I don't think while I appreciate James's answer, and I think he's ultimately right, I don't think that's how the cultural reaction is going to be. I think it's going to be more nuanced than that. So,
like my answer.
Yeah, but there's a lot to that. Certainly, like things like... it's the same question of, like, how do you judge the Founding Fathers to me, you know? So, anyway.
Yeah, but that's the thing about Thomas Jefferson. When I went to Monticello, he specifically wrote, and nobody talks about this, where he wrote about, like, yeah, slavery is bad, but, like, I can only solve so many fucking problems, people. And I'm translating, obviously, loosely. Like, he didn't write, like, Justin
Is that Old English?
Yeah, that's Old English. But he basically said, like, yo, I can only solve so many fucking problems. Like, I founded, like... the government that's most based on liberty in the history of the world, and you also want me to end slavery? Like, dude, the next generation can handle that one. So it's a little different when someone like Thomas Jefferson was aware of the other problems. It's just sort of like he only has so much fucking time in a day. Like, he founded a school in a country. Like, what else do you want the guy to do?
Yeah. All right, I've derailed Kevin Spacey's
like, Kevin Spacey's like, I acted and I also raped little boys. I don't think there's a comparison there.
It's in the same... vein of things. I don't mean to compare them morally. The question is, like, if there are people you admire who have done immoral things, how do you judge them? That's the generalized question.
All right. Next Reddit. What is your favorite series finale? I don't believe we've discussed this on the show before. So I just want to, what are your guys' thoughts? Favorite series finale?
The one I had the best emotional reaction to, even though I'm not sure it was the best art, although it was good art, don't get me wrong, was the House season finale, or series finale. I thought it ended pretty much how it needed to end in order to be coherent. Wasn't a huge fan of the last season, although I thought it was fine. I don't hate it. I had the best emotional reaction to that. The one that I thought that artistically fit the show the best... was the series finale of Arrested Development. I'm talking about the original series, not the weird Netflix edition.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty good.
Fucked up the whole series finale of the original show. So,
those are my two. With Arrested Development, those are both two very good ones. I agree with you. With the Arrested Development one, when I saw that, I was like, why do people want this show to come back? Like, they ended the story perfectly. Like, he was like, fuck this family, you're all crazy, I'm going to quit sanctioning them, and I'm going to move on and do my own life and raise my kid on my own. I was like, that's great, that's the point of the show. Yep. And then when the Netflix show comes on, it devolves backwards into him indulging his family and supporting them again. And I'm just like, I've just watched this character go backwards for the sake of the fact that you guys just want to make some more money and people just want to mindlessly be entertained.
Yeah.
I think you're being too soft on the House finale. I think it's arguably the best finale ever. It was the perfect ending for the show. And it makes me appreciate the show more in retrospect. So that might be the best finale ever. I also want to throw a couple other ones in the ring. The Angel finale is very good, where Angel is just always, you know, there's another evil to fight. And it just ends with them in an alley and they're coming up against evil forces. And they go to Angel, what do we do next? And he says, keep fighting. And that's the end of the show. It's just that's good. It's sort of like the fight never ends. People change. They evolve. People die. You gain new allies. But the fight always continues. There's always a battle between good and evil. That was a very good ending. And then also the Mad Men series finale is very good. It reveals what the entire show is about. It has that very romantic scene, which is the key for the whole series, and it changes your perspective on the series. And it also executes the arc of all the characters, and specifically Don Draper well. That's what I would say for probably my favorite series finales. James?
I wasn't able to really think. Getting a good series finale is really hard. When you build up all this, all these themes and stuff, being able to integrate it at the end is just really hard. Like, I know Game of Thrones isn't going to do it, for example. They will fail at integrating it at the end. It's almost certain, even though it's a very good show. But I tend to notice, I hate to say this, but I have to admit, I tend to notice when it's done extremely badly. Battlestar Galactica looms heavily in my mind.
Yo, that finale was so bad that my roommate at the time wanted to watch me watch it because he knew I was going to have such an angry reaction to it.
Well, Justin, did you watch the entire series leading up to that finale? Or did you just watch the finale?
Battlestar Galactica, it has a few missteps, but up until the point that the final Cylon is revealed, is it a good series? But once they reveal the final Cylon, it just fucking goes downhill from there in the final season.
It just, yeah, that final season is just, it becomes clear that they had no plan all along. Remember how it keeps saying, like, the Cylons have a plan? Like, no, they fucking didn't. Neither did the writers. Tackle. Oh, wait. I'm not supposed to say that here.
Well, at least you said it finally. I appreciate that.
Westworld, it's not a series finale, but the season finale of Westworld. I really liked the integration at the end there. Then there's also an anime I really liked the ending of. Gargantia, the virtuous planet. No one's watched that, though. Very well integrated plot. The end of Death Note is also, a lot of people find it disappointing, but because it's not a terribly romantic ending, well, it's not a happy ending, but it does integrate the entire show very well. So those are
your anime discussion reminded me of a not anime show, Avatar: The Last Airbender, which actually also has a tremendous series finale.
I couldn't get through the first season. It was too video game-like for me. It's like, let's go to a new island and meet new people and fight a new boss.
It's so good, Justin. It's so good.
I should watch that. Would I like that? That sounds like an anime, what you just described.
Well, it's...
Oh, it's very much like an anime.
It's okay, just an
it's
American
supposed to be
anime.
Sort of quasi-inspired by an anime. Whenever I bring this up, though, to people who love anime, they universally tell me it's not anime. So I've just started saying it.
I'm just racist. But
I mean,
it's an Asian
people
show.
Who watch anime are snobs. Like, I have nothing to do with the actual people who watch it. Whatever they're getting out of it is not the same thing I am.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Avatar: The Last Airbender, the cartoon is tremendous.
Okay.
Yeah. Not the movie.
Not the movie.
Terrible
right.
movie.
Right. Yeah.
Gross. Also, the James Cameron Avatar is also stupid. Don't watch that either.
But they're not bending air in that one.
Last Reddit, yeah?
Yeah.
You ready?
Fine.
All right. What is the most annoying thing a teacher ever did when you were in school? I love how they have to preface this when you were in school as if, like, you would think of annoying things a teacher did when you weren't in school.
James?
I can think of the most evil thing that they did when I was in school. This was the whole administration. When I was in first grade, I was super bored. Because I already knew everything that, like, they were talking about, because I, like, watched Bill Nye the Science Guy, and I'd already learned how to read and like, stuff like that. So I was just super bored. So they put me in the second grade class in order to teach me a lesson. Like, oh, well, you know, see how you like it when we move you up if you think you're such a smarty pants. And then I actually started enjoying it because, like, I was getting material that was on my level. And like, they're like, oh, well, I guess that didn't work. It didn't teach them a lesson. And they sent me back to the first grade class and then attempted to prescribe me Ritalin, which my parents very, very thankfully, I think, get on my knees and thank. I don't actually do this. Maybe I should get on my knees every day and thank them for saying no to that.
Wow.
James's parents, if you're listening to the podcast, thank you from the midside.
Wow, I don't have evil. I have generally annoying. Because then I had an English teacher when I was in high school who was stupid, put it that way. And she was unapologetically stupid, which was the annoying part. And it was literally things like she was giving us a vocabulary test and she would say, the next vocab word is monstericity. And everyone's looking around, and so I'm the dick in the class, always was. I was not the class clown, I was the class go-fuck-yourself teacher. That's what I was. And so I would raise my hand and go, I don't think that's a word. But I said it quasi-politely, like I wasn't super harsh about it. She goes, no, that's the spelling word. It's monstericity. I'm like, nope, I don't think that's a word. And she would go around, and she sent me to the principal's office for being disruptive. And she never corrected herself. And luckily the principal, at least for that incident, was quasi-rationally said, so it was monstrosity, right? And I said, yes, it was monstrosity. He goes, just sit here for 10 minutes and you can go back.
Oh, man, dude, you have the best stories of when you're at various levels of school. Between this and then the, people's minds determine the laws of physics, and then, chanting shock and awe in the school bus. You have some really good stories.
I was a complete dick throughout most of school because I assumed my teachers were idiots. And most of them were. Some not. Some I really admired, but most. As Adam Carolla says, teachers, not all universally heroes. Not the case. So, Justin?
I have a story that's in between your two extremes of stupid and evil. Mm. So I was in fifth grade. I had just started at my new private school and we were doing some activity where we were working on our own, but then we had to like hand in our work to the teacher. And I said, I don't remember, the details are a little fuzzy, but what matters is the way things were reacted to, or the way I was reacted to. Well, I had mine handed in and the teacher claimed I didn't hand mine in. And she's like, you didn't hand it in. Where is it? And I was like, I don't know. I handed it in. And she's like, well, I don't have it, so it's not handed in. And I was like, but I handed it in. And she would just get more and more mad at me. And this is like in front of the whole class. And she just starts yelling at me. And like, I just start crying because like my view of reality is like I'm being told I'm a bad person because my view of reality is faulty, basically. So I'm like, I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? And I'm sure I'm having flashbacks because this is a lot like dealing with my mother, right? It's like whatever I say is correct and what you say is wrong, even if you are viewing reality correctly. So it was like probably the worst thing that could have happened to a young me, especially, you know, like I said, in front of a new school that I'm in. And then eventually she finds it. And somehow, even though I handed it in, it was already in the outbox. So she had like an in and out box on her desk. And I didn't put it in the outbox. I handed it in.
Yeah, because you're more of a Five Guys guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's awful. I hate teachers who do that. I have one other story that is annoying, but in a more benevolent way that I still got around and fucking
Can I stop you for a second?
Yeah.
Like, shouldn't you not yell at your students? Like, shouldn't you, if you have the teacher, be a teacher, have a temperament to not yell at your fifth grade students?
Well, yeah, except that a lot of teachers are fucking retarded, so.
Yeah. Okay, continue.
Yeah. No, we're totally on your side here. It's ridiculous. But I had another high school English teacher. My high school English teachers, for the most part, were an atrocity. Who was like super hippie.
No, not an atrocity. You're going to say it properly.
an atricity. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. They were an atricity. And this guy was like super hippie, like didn't want to even do grades, but the school forced him to. And like, you know, I'd ask him like, well, you know, how do you want us to approach this assignment, this writing assignment? His answer would always be like, well, write whatever you feel. Write what your feelings are. And so I would do things to try to piss him off because I hated this nonsense of I'm a hippie and writing is subjective. So he'd say, like, write a 500-word essay about how you felt about this, whatever. And so I wrote the word dumb 500 times. And he gave me an A, and he said it was really creative. His one critique was that next time it needs to be complete sentences. And so the next time we did a 500-word essay on a book, when we're supposed to write what we feel, I wrote the word go 500 times. Because go is a complete sentence. And he gave me another fucking A. And I basically did this every single time and produced no good writing whatsoever. But I got an A on everyone for being hyper creative. Like one time I wrote the essay in crayon in a spiral formation. So that he literally had to turn the page clockwise in order to read the essay. Clockwise constantly, by the way.
You deserve some kind of like comedy medal or something for.
I got a literal medal, James. I won a literal medal my senior year for creative writing from my school. The Otto Schroeder Writing Award or something. It was a literal medal.
Wait, did he not realize you were trolling him?
I don't know if he thought I was trolling him or he thought I was like the next goddamn James Joyce or whatever. Like, oh my god. He was such an annoying... I mean, he's not even a prick. He was like a super nice guy. Just hyper annoying with this whole... It's whatever you feel is what's right. Oh my god.
Oh yeah. My dog.
That's fun.
Yeah, I rip on that whenever the students I tutor tell me they're told to say, you know, what did you feel about this after they read something? The fucking worst question.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen, that brings us to the end of our trip here this week. What did we learn? Daniel?
I learned that telling people it's okay to be white is wildly racist, which in itself is wildly racist.
James?
I further learned the extent of Daniel's trollery.
Yeah. Fuck teachers. Okay. Justin, what'd you learn this week?
Eh, nothing. So I learned that I'm going to go off of the show this week. I learned that I'm very sad that Deshaun Watson blew out his knee. I know that probably belongs in the other show, but like, yeah. I legit almost cried. So I just want to mention that on here.
Yeah, too bad. Sean Watson, great guy, talented athlete, doesn't deserve that. And hopefully,
although would he stop liking thoughts pictures on Instagram? Like seriously, my Instagram feed, like it's finally getting to a place where it's okay. And then every once in a while, this really like low class, the picture of like a low class black woman will appear in my feed, and I'll click on it. And I'll go, why the fuck is this in my feed? And it'll go, liked by Deshaun Watson. It's like, dude, you're an NFL starting quarterback now. Like, raise your standards. Sorry, I just needed a rant about that.
Well, it's going to be a lot more of it now. He's got to sit at home and do nothing.
Yeah, so. I know. Well, at least he won't. Look, we remember what the last time happened when a quarterback blew out his knee and had to sit at home due to an injury. We got Colin Kaepernick suing the NFL now. So maybe it's better that Deshaun Watson's just liking pictures of thoughts on Instagram.
That's right. If you, too, want to like some things on Instagram, why not at the Midside? Like some of our photos and the Wednesday, Witnessed Wednesday, is that what you're calling it, Justin? Where you're pulling out clips from previous shows?
Which I think hashtag Witness, hashtag Witness Wednesday. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been fun. I've been reliving some old things that I said that could get me fired. So all tremendous there on Instagram. And
that's my number one criteria when I'm picking those. I go, what is the clip I can find that will most likely get Daniel fired?
Yeah, I've noticed. So, okay. So, there's also the Snapchat and Facebook and Twitter, all at the Midside. Follow us on social media, share the posts, tell the friend to like it, etc., etc., etc. If you want to listen to previous episodes, say you discovered something on a Witnessed Wednesday that you want to listen to, you can listen to all the previous episodes of Welcome to the Midside at themidside.com/podcast. While you're there, you can click over to the store, Midside, or pod, what is the website? Themidside.com/store.
Themidside.com/store.
Yeah, right? Midside.com/store. Did I say that right? Okay.
Yes.
You can buy a t-shirt. We have some awesome t-shirts of awesomeness. Classic logo, so classic. False Dichotomy Bro. What else is up there, Justin?
The Hail Snyder t-shirt.
That's right. The classic Hail Snyder t-shirt. That's right. So you can get
and
those.
I'm going to get some sort of Witness the Forest t-shirt up there soon.
Yeah, that'd be excellent. And then if you want to help us out financially and you don't want to buy a shirt because you don't have arms or something, I don't know, you can go to Patreon.
Quadriplegics. We still want the quadriplegic money.
We do. We just, you know, don't wear our shirts. So patreon.com/themidside. Where you can choose to give us some money every time we produce content. We create a show, it deducts money from your account, a buck, 50 cents, 10 bucks, whatever it is you can afford. It helps us keep the lights on, not off, on.
Important distinction.
That's right. Very important.
In the words of Hillary Duff, if the light isn't off, it's on.
That's right. Not a zero, but a one. Thank you, binary humor. Okay, so there's all that. If you can't do any of that, why don't you go ahead, like we said at the top of the show, and tell a friend. Tell a friend. Friend
Just tell
telling.
A friend already. Come
That's
on.
Right.
Why haven't you told a friend yet?
Tell
stop
them.
What you're doing right now. I don't know what you're doing right now. Whatever it is,
stop it.
And tell a friend. I told a friend this week, and he said, doesn't sound like something I'm interested in. So that was fun.
Wow. Damn,
love
dude.
Love friends. Yeah.
But you know what? At least you tried.
That's
I commended
right.
you for making the approach and the ask.
That's right. And I wasn't accused of sexual harassment. It was awesome. So
yeah.
If you can tell a friend, that's the number one way our show grows. So we can beat out Welcome to Night Vale and Welcome to the Beehive and all the other Welcome to shows, which are vastly inferior to our Welcome to show. So tell a friend. And thanks to Liberty.me. I think, for still syndicating us. Probably look into that. Otherwise, we're just giving them free advertising. But
no, we're still syndicating.
Okay, awesome. Yay, libertarians. Okay, thanks. And until next time, much love.
This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin M. Lesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.